Good morning.
Good morning.
Nice to see you. It's funny how God does stuff. We didn't plan that, and we're certainly not trying to make a bigger deal of it than it is. But the message this morning is on service, actually. So just, you know, let's just put that in the maybe God set this one up kind of category, okay? And we'll explore what He's got to say to each of us individually. What was your first encounter with Jesus like? If you've had an encounter. Maybe you haven't had an encounter. Maybe you're waiting. But what was it like? Perhaps it was like mine, which was really not an encounter, but like a series of sort of growing into a knowledge of Jesus from kind of a young age. Punctuated different events, but kind of growing into it. Maybe you're like that. Maybe your first encounter was kind of like that. Maybe it was a little bit more like, hey, that was pretty smooth. Maybe it was like more dramatic and sort of this one-time thing where Jesus showed up like Saul on the road to Damascus and boom, there's bright lights and He spoke to you. Maybe it was like that. What was your first encounter like? Maybe it was somewhere in the middle of those two extremes or ends of the spectrum. Perhaps you're still looking for an encounter. Perhaps you're searching, you're exploring, checking it out. This morning, we're going to look at two different particular encounters with Jesus, and in particular in the life of Peter. And so last week, Nate launched us off into our new series. We're going to look at Peter. We're going to use him as a template and look at his life from what we know of him, what's recorded of him, and look at the different events that happened with Jesus and after Jesus left that punctuated or that formed his life with Jesus, that formed him as he was following Jesus. But this morning we're going to look at two particular stories at the very beginning of his encounters with Jesus. We're not exactly sure when he met. There's different gospel accounts. All four record, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, all four record sort of early events of Jesus and Peter meeting together. They're not really chronological, so there's a few events that overlap, and so it's hard to piece together exactly what happened first and what happened second and third and fourth, etc. But we have some great stories of Jesus encountering Peter, and we're going to look at them this morning. And just to give you a heads up, so we're going to be looking at Luke, so you can turn there if you want, but before Luke chapter 4 is where we're going to start, and we're going to spend our time in Luke chapter 4 and 5. But before we go there, let me just give you a little background on Peter and set the stage, so to speak. Peter, anyone know where he was from? Bible trivia time. What's that? I didn't catch that, but it sounded funny. Oh yeah, right. Peter from Transcona. So St. Peter the Apostle, I guess I should be very clear, with Sean in the room. Where was he from?
Capernaum.
He was from Capernaum, right, exactly. I've got a picture of Capernaum here, I think. There it is. Okay, whoop. Oh, jeez. Lag. There we go. So Capernaum is kind of in northern Israel, and you can see there, it's right on the shores, on the north shore of the Sea of Galilee, which actually is not a sea, it's a lake, it's fresh water, still. And it actually has an inflow, you can see at the top there, and an outflow as well, goes into the Dead Sea, which is like those kind of seas that we don't want to be as stagnant. But Capernaum was quite a beautiful spot. It's actually about 600 feet below sea level, and so it has this sort of natural tropical kind of feel to it. I'm not exactly sure if it still does it? So now you've been there. It's still very kind of a lovely place, isn't it? And you can see there's a picture that's modern day, and it's quite lovely. There's lots of, it's fertile ground, and in Jesus' day, it was quite populated. There was a number of towns all around it there, you can see. And each one had around 15,000 people, so it was actually quite a dense, populated place. And this is where Peter's from, Israel's largest freshwater body. And it's about 20 kilometers wide, so you can kind of guesstimate what that's like. I don't know if what lakes around us are about that, but certainly not as big as Lake Winnipeg. But probably, maybe around the size of West Hawkland or something like that. I'm not exactly sure. Is that about right? 20 kilometers? No, West Hawk's a lot smaller.
Yeah,
anyways, I didn't do that research for you this morning. I did other research. But Peter, he was born roughly around the same time as Jesus, about 1 BC, actually, is what they think. He might have been just a little older. And died quite a death that we'll probably explore later on in our series here, later on this winter or the spring. In about 67 AD, which is, if you know your history, right around the time of Nero, and he was executed around then. He was a brother to Andrew, who actually introduced Peter to Jesus. Andrew was actually a disciple of John the Baptist, and John the Baptist just said, "Hey, look, behold, that's him, that's the Messiah." And Andrew was there, he was like, "What, that's the Messiah?" And so he ran and told his brother Peter, "Hey, I think I found him," and introduced him. And so we don't know much about what that introduction was like, other than these few little stories here. But we also know that Peter, what did he do for a livelihood? He was a fisherman in a boat kind of like that. Most boats, I think I have, yeah, there you go. On the top right there, that's an actual, a first century Galilean boat that they unearthed a few years ago. It was stuck in the mud and preserved in the mud. So that actually, that could have been the boat that Jesus, you know, rode across the water on or preached that we'll read about from a boat. It could have been Peter's boat, but that's the kind of the styling and the size. About 20 to 30 feet long. So they're pretty, you know, they're kind of not little canoes, right? Pretty decent. But he was a fisherman, which meant he was really tied to the land, to the, not the land, but like the water, you know? And he was tied to the elements. They were kind of vulgar and sort of, you know, you ever been hanging out at a truck stop? It's kind of like that, you know? You can hear some choice language and... you know, kind of rough working kind of environment. And that's what Peter was like. He was in that kind of, he grew up in that. He worked hard. He was partners with James and John, who were two of Jesus' other disciples. Who they were nicknamed what? What were their names? James and John were the sons of thunder, right? So you can imagine, if you were a business partner with two guys who were nicknamed the sons of thunder, you can imagine what Peter would have to be like to kind of get along with these guys, you know? Like, they probably had their good days. And then they probably had their bad business days, and they would get into arguments, and you can imagine that there would be lots of, "Oh, I don't know about this," you know, expletive, expletive, right? And that's kind of that's sort of the picture that we get of Peter. A hardworking, you know, dirt under the fingernails, you know, fish slugging guy. And this is who Jesus met. We know that he was outspoken. He was quick to speak. He was quick-tempered. He was quick to make both pronouncements and assumptions. And we'll explore some of those. He was like, he was the very first to acknowledge Jesus as the Messiah. He was the first to do that. He was like, "Bam, you are the Messiah." You can read about it, and we'll look at it in weeks from now. But he was also he also cut off an ear, like just real quick, you know, like, "You're not going to take him?" Whack! He whacked off this poor guy's ear. He was like impulsive. Like, he was, you know, quick kind of guy. Man of action. He walked on water. Denied ever knowing Jesus. Most of the time, the gospel writers, and even he himself sometimes, he's portrayed as someone who doesn't fully comprehend his actions and what Jesus is trying to do. Anyone can relate to that? I can relate to that sometimes. Yeah. When Jesus gathers his disciples, which is not unusual for a rabbi, they all would have had disciples. But what's unusual is that Jesus would choose a guy like Peter. It's very odd to choose a rough, fish-slugging fisherman as a disciple. And that's kind of the guy that he was. And we hope that as we explore who he was and what he did and the events of his life that you'll be able to relate and that we can learn from him. We can learn how to follow Jesus well through the life of Peter, through the life of this guy that was a very unlikely candidate to be one of Jesus' disciples. This non-theologically trained fisherman. So, let's read together Luke 4, chapter 4. Two little snippets of stories. There's a whole bunch here that are there. This is in Capernaum. So this was at Peter's hometown. This is where Peter and Andrew was Peter's brother, their hometown in Capernaum on the shores of the Sea of Galilee. He had just finished speaking at a synagogue. So at the Jewish church, basically, and which was just a few hundred meters away. Barb was just telling me that they visited that very spot. And you can go there, and I think I might have a picture later on to show you, I can't recall, of the actual synagogue that's built on top of an older synagogue that was probably the one that Jesus spoke in. And he spoke, and there was a demon, and he exercised this demon as a very public display of authority and power. And right after that, this is the story of what happened. So let's read. After leaving the synagogue that day, Jesus went to Simon's home. Okay, just to pause here for a sec. Simon was his old name. Jesus actually gave him a new name, and we're going to look at that a little while later. But in this story, he's called Simon or Simon Peter. And later on, his name is changed to Peter. Jesus went to Simon's home where he found Simon's mother-in-law very sick with a high fever. That's technical language, actually. Not joking. Luke is writing this. He's a doctor. "Please heal her," everyone begged. Standing at her bedside, he rebuked the fever, and it left her. And she got up at once and began to serve them. Okay, second story. We're just going to skip just a few little verses there and into chapter 5. One day, Jesus was preaching on the shore of the Sea of Galilee. Great crowds pressed in on him to listen to the word of God. He noticed two empty boats at the water's edge, kind of like the ones that we just saw. For the fishermen had left them there and were washing their nets. Stepping into one of the boats, Jesus asked Simon, its owner, to push it out into the water. So he sat in the boat and taught the crowds from there. When he had finished speaking, he said to Simon, "Now go out where it's deeper and let down your nets to catch some fish." "Master," Simon replied, "we worked hard all last night and didn't catch a thing. But if you say so, I'll let the nets down again." And this time their nets were so full of fish they began to tear. A shout for help brought their partners in the other boat, and soon both boats were filled with fish and on the verge of sinking. When Simon Peter realized what had happened, he fell to his knees before Jesus and said, "Oh Lord, please leave me. I'm too much of a sinner to be around you." For he was awestruck by the number of fish they had caught, as were the others with him. His partners James and John, the sons of Zebedee, were also amazed. Jesus said to Simon, "Don't be afraid. From now on, you'll be fishing for people." As soon as they landed, they left everything and followed Jesus. As soon as they left everything, they followed Jesus. I want to tease out two things about these miraculous stories. One was a story of healing. The other was like a story of, I don't know what the heck that is, like fish. It's a fish story. What's that?
Provision.
There we go, sure. But they both point to something. Like every miracle that's recorded in the Bible, it's there for a purpose. It's recorded in there, it's written for a purpose. And Jesus does them for reasons. And the important part is not to ask what happened. The important question is to ask, why did it happen? What does the miracle point towards? And that's what I want to look at this morning, is what do these two stories of encounters with Jesus in Peter's early life, what did they point towards? And I think that we're going to look at that. The first one is in verse 39. The answer is right there. And she got up at once and began to serve them. That's what it's pointing towards. The second story, the answer is right in the very last verse 11. And as soon as they landed, they left everything and followed Jesus. So let's take a little closer look. Let's look at Peter's mother-in-law's story, which is also recorded in Mark 1 and Matthew chapter 8, if you want to cross-reference. There's slightly different details in each. It doesn't really indicate that they're competing. It's just different gospel writers had different agendas. They were writing to different audiences. And so sometimes the facts were different because they were highlighting different parts. It doesn't mean that they're competing or that they're that they cancel each other. It doesn't necessarily say that, well, it's not true because all the facts don't line up. It's just they're coming at it from different angles, right? So, but Jesus here is portrayed as a very ordinary man. It's among his first of his miracles. We mentioned that he cast out a demon in the synagogue just earlier that day. And he's described there as having immense power and authority. But here, it's right after church, right after the service, and he goes straight to where he's staying with a few friends, probably for a meal. Pretty ordinary, hey? I remember growing up, my dad was a pastor, and so my memories of Sunday afternoon were always, and I don't know if you're in this situation too, you might be, but every Sunday afternoon was always marked by a nap. After we had our pancakes and ice cream. That was our, we had to drive an hour to church, an hour back, and we had pancakes and ice cream covered with corn syrup. I don't know what the heck. Maybe we just couldn't afford real syrup or something, but corn syrup. I just thought about it this morning. I was like, I can't believe. Anyways, sorry to distract you like that. But we did, after the service, you went back, he'd given of himself, preached, he'd done whatever, and he really gave of himself, and that's how it's like, you know. And it's kind of like, think about after you come home from a hard day of work, you know, not that this is hard, but it's, you're giving up yourself. It takes something out of you and you need to rest, right? So that's kind of the picture of Jesus that's being painted here. He'd just done this amazing thing in the synagogue. He'd given of himself and he's going home for a meal. He's going to where he was staying. He's going to rest. Maybe do, you know, maybe relax and hang out with a few friends. That's the picture that's happening here. So he goes straight to where he was staying. It's all very, very ordinary and understandable. And he goes to this place, and this is actually a picture of a church that's built over a church that was built over Peter's house. Does that make sense? So this is this is Peter's house here, or what tradition states is Peter's house right there. And then there was this octagonal church right here that goes around like this. And then there was this new huge church built over top, and that's what that beam is, and they have covered it in glass. You can go look inside from the church. And so that's where he was going. He was actually going to a place, and tradition says that this was the place. There's kind of graffiti inside that site that kind of indicates, like ancient graffiti, not spray paint, but like little carvings of fish symbols and stuff like that in there. So it could be, I mean, Constantine's mother ran around in 380 and erected a whole bunch of churches over sacred spots. And so there's some debate as to how correct she was, as you can imagine. So who knows? Maybe, maybe not. But anyways, it was really close to the water, and it was close to the synagogue, and it's where Jesus was staying. It was Peter's house, and his mother-in-law was there. And when Jesus hears that Peter's mother-in-law is sick, he does a very ordinary thing. He goes to see her. His friends tell him, she's sick, come. And Luke describes, and remember, Luke is a doctor, I mentioned already. And so he's actually using some medical language here. He says in verse 38, she's very sick with a high fever. Megalo is the name. And there was a couple different fevers. And megalo was actually a major fever, and there was certain, it was like how they described fevers that had become very violent. Like they grabbed, like they just, and maybe there were seizures involved or something. But and then also that very sick indicates that it was a serious thing. And so she was bedridden, and she couldn't do what she normally would like to do when there was people around, and she couldn't host, and she couldn't do some of her responsibilities. Like, they didn't have, you know, sick days in those days. If you were sick, you just worked through it, unless you couldn't work through it, and then you were bedridden, and that was the case here. And Mark's account says that Jesus went in and took her by the hand. Luke mentions him bending over her and rebuking the spirit, which is the same word that Jesus used to rebuke the demon. Rebuked the demon in a few verses earlier. Rebuked the sickness. Same word. And Matthew actually, he even makes it more personal. He says, and he touched her. He took her by the hand. He took her by the hand. He reached out and took her by the hand. Matthew writing to a Jewish audience that Jesus wouldn't get unclean from touching someone who was unclean, who was sick. And that's what they believed, that if you touched someone that was sick, you yourself would become unclean and you'd have to be cleansed. It doesn't work that way with Jesus. It works the other way around, that Jesus makes us clean, right? His power flows out of him. And Matthew talks about him reaching and taking her by the hand. He's very specific about saying that. Takes her by the hand. It seems like a very small and kind of ordinary thing that happened. I mean, yes, she was healed. This fever left her, and it says it immediately, right? Immediately, she got up. So it was pretty dramatic in that way. But everything else, think about the previous one. He was in the synagogue. He was like on a stage. It was public. This is private, in a house. Jesus didn't, you know, hold on to his right to rest, you know, to have time to himself. He served. He gave of himself. It's a picture of a compassionate Jesus. But it seems small and somewhat ordinary compared to all the others, especially when we consider what Peter's mother-in-law did after that. And how many of God's movings in our life are small and seem kind of ordinary? How many times does God's presence in our lives just seem small and ordinary? But it's still his presence moving and working in us. So what does this point to? What's the message here? In all three accounts that are mentioned here, it says she was completely restored and she immediately, what? Served. Right. Now, this is an interesting word to use here. Now, I know that some of us will think, oh yeah, okay, just in time for supper. Right? Jesus healed her because he was hungry and she was the cook. Right? I don't know if you thought that, but, you know, like some of us think that, right? And that might be true. And there's certainly parts of it that are true to that, okay? But don't just peg Peter's mother-in-law into a cook role, into a servant kind of role, into one that's her place, she belongs there, she should be, serving for the guests that are there. That would be an incorrect assumption there. It's the same word is used at serve, diakoneo is the word, deacon, diakoneo, that's where we get our word deacon from. It's the same word that the angels came after Jesus' temptations, the angels came and served him. Same word. It's also the same word that Paul uses when he's writing in the Romans. He says, I went to Jerusalem to serve God's people there. Paul is saying he served. Okay? It's used elsewhere too. The same word describes the New Testament people who led the church in prayer and action. Deacons. Diakoneo is the root one. Instead, whoever wants to be great among you must be your servant. And whoever wants to be first must be the slave of all. For even the Son of Man did not come to serve. No, did not come to be served, but to
serve.
Glad you're with me. and give his life as a ransom for many. John says, whoever serves me must follow me. Do as I do. Service restores our purpose. This is a picture of Jesus as a compassionate person, compassionate man, a compassionate God who is healing her, not just to, you know, get some supper, but so she could fulfill her purpose. So she could serve. Yes, it included making supper, but it was so much bigger than that. It's like, yes, serving here and this might mean doing the sound, but it's so much bigger than that. It's so much beyond that. It's living a life that is for others in your worship of Jesus as you follow him and serve him. That's the picture. She got up immediately and served. She was healed to serve. And God's calling each one of us in our own ways. Every single one of us in our own ways. He's got a purpose for each one of us. It's unique. How is he calling you this morning? What's the laughter about? The screaming upstairs. I know. I didn't think it was that bad. Okay, let's look at the second story. Peter's calling. Peter, the professional fisherman. He was a pro at this. That's how he made his living. And here is Jesus hopping in the boat and preaching, and then saying, "Hey, Peter." So this is during the day now. They fish normally in the evenings or at night. This is during the day. He says, "Hey, Peter, go a little deeper. I'm going to show you something. Me, the carpenter's son, I'm going to show you a thing or two about fishing." It'd be like me saying, "Kurt, you know, you're a handyman. You know what to do." And it would be like me telling you what to do. I mean, I'm a bit of a handyman, but you're a real handyman. Or, you know, Ben, me telling Ben some stock advice. Like, it's just kind of, like, weird. You know, it doesn't fit. But here is this carpenter, son of a carpenter, telling this professional fisherman how to fish. Be like any one of us telling Paul Maurice how to coach the Jets, you know? We all have our ideas, right? We all know what needs to be done. But he's the pro. Let's let him just do it. He's doing a good job. Okay. And Peter says, you know, the conditions are not right. Their major effort had failed last night. But against his professional judgment, he agrees and he says, "We worked hard all last night and didn't catch a thing, but if you say so, I'll let the nets down again." Elijah and I went fishing a lot this summer. We went on a canoe trip for about 4 days in northern Minnesota. And 3 of those days, we fished all the time. And dragging the fish nets, or the fishing line behind us as we were paddling from one spot to another. And, you know, I prepared, I talked to the local and said, "Where's the good spots? Tell me about it." You know, because I'm not really a great fisherman, so I need all the help I can get. And they said, "Oh, you're going to this lake? Well, that's amazing." No, absolutely, for sure. That lake's packed with fish. No question you're going to catch a fish. We'd spend the day going through there, morning, evening, late, zero, nothing. Like, what is going on? And so the very last day, we're like, "Okay, we've got to try one more time." And he's like, "We've got to get it." And so he puts the worm on his hook and does a little blessing, you know. "Hey, worm, you go get the fish." Cast it out. Immediately, boom, caught this one fish. Such joy, right? It's amazing. And then, but, I mean, pretty pathetic. 5 days, one fish. Few weeks later, we're at Rod Jerzak's cabin, and he's and they're thinking, "Okay, we're take the boys out fishing." And so then I'm like, "No, you guys go have fun." And they're going a couple of hours around, circling, nothing, zero. And this is a stocked little pond. He's got really nice rainbow trout in there. And so Rod comes back and no luck, but he's got this gleam in his eye. He's like, I don't have to catch some fish. And he pulls out this big box, pops it on the ground, and it's this big 70-foot net. Like this massive net. And we just like throw the thing out there and leave. 3 hours later, we come back, paddle out, and are pulling this thing in. There's one fish. Oh my goodness, it's so exciting, I love this fish, we got it. There's two fish. Oh my goodness, it's two, three, four, eight fish we caught out of this big long net. We were like so excited, we're over the moon, you know, like, woo, these fish, they're so good, they're gonna taste so yummy. Imagine, that was a lot of joy for eight fish. Imagine two boatloads, 20 to 30 feet, these boats are big, full to the point of sinking. Full to the point of sinking. Imagine what this is like for Peter. He's like, oh my good, oh my, ha, help, help! And he's, you know, calls his friends over, but he's like, there's something going on here. This is holy ground. This is like crazy. I've never seen, this is like the professional, this is like the best catch ever in my whole career. This is the catch of a lifetime. But there's something supernatural going on here. This is holy ground. And what does he say? Let's find it. He says, oh Lord, please leave me. I'm too much a sinner to be around you. Leave me. I'm too much a sinner to be around you. And Jesus says, no, don't worry. I see your humility. I see your honesty. You're going to be fishermen of men. And as soon as they landed, what happened? They left everything. They dropped their nets. And they followed into a life of service. Into a life of service. In the first story, Peter's mother-in-law is healed to bring her into her vocation, her true vocation of service. The fever, whatever that fever was keeping her from living her true purpose. Ooh, yeah. What are they doing with all that fish? That's a good thought. I have no idea. Party. Maybe they dried it in pemmican. Took it with them. What's your fever? Do you have a fever? What's your fever? Second story, Peter is thinking that his sin, his unworthiness, would keep him from a life of following Jesus. But actually his humility and his openness, his honesty, was the prerequisite for a life of service. Do you have something that you think is keeping you, but it's actually not? Is there something in your life that you need to drop? What are your nets? Peter's nets were actual nets. He dropped them. And he followed. God's calling each one of us. And the call is continual. The invitation is always there. He's always calling. He's always working. He's always organizing. He's kind of the behind the scenes guy. Setting things up. And he's speaking. He's calling us. St. Jerome said this, may Christ come to our house and enter in and by his command cure the fever of our sins. Each one of us is sick with a fever. Whenever I give way to anger, I have fever. If there are many fever, there are as many fevers as there are faults and vices. Let us beg the apostles to intercede with us for Jesus, that he may come and touch our hand. If he does so, at once our fever is gone. He's an excellent physician, and truly the chief physician. We're going to pray for each other, but let's answer these two questions for ourselves. Do you have a fever? And if so, what is it? And what are your nets that you need to drop? Holy Spirit, would you come? Would you speak to us? We need you. Lord, so many of we're all on different points of the journey here. Some of us have experienced you dramatically, but a long time ago. To recall what you've called us to. We need to bring back to the forefront what you've put us here to do. Others, Lord, of us are searching, checking you out. Lord, would you come and meet with us? Okay, I'm going to ask us to be bold like Peter here, and if you want some prayer for one of those two things, okay, and maybe some other stuff too if there's other prophetic stuff coming, but if you can name a fever in your life, something that is keeping you from your purpose. Something that is holding you back. Something that's handicapping you in your life. Let's stand together. And then we'll come around and pray for you. So I'm asking you to stand if you have a fever of some kind. Sorry. Too clear. That's okay. Okay. And then if you know specifically some... Wow, that really just cut it out. Love it. And if you don't, okay, how about you just come to the front if you want some prayer for anything, okay? But let's take it seriously though, eh? Like, Jesus, his presence actually is here to release us and to free us, to heal us. Not just because he can get something out of us, like a good meal, but so that we can come alive. Right? So let's get that stuff out of the way. Seriously. We can, like, all we have to do is ask him. And then let's pray for each other, okay, guys? Can we do that? Yes? Okay? And if there's stuff in your life you know you need to drop, like, I believe that God is saying some very particular things, not a general kind of, yeah, we give it all to Jesus. No, what are you giving it to him? What is he saying? You know what, my son, my daughter, this is coming in the way between you and me. You need to give it up.
Yeah.
You need to let it go. What are those things? Do you have something? If you do, you got to get prayed for, okay? Stand up, open your hands up, whatever posture you need to open yourself up to Jesus. Okay? If you've never done that before, if you've never said, Jesus, you're pretty cool. Like, but you're more than pretty cool. You're a savior. Like, you are God. And I need you. Because I can't do it without you. Then now's the time to invite him to come. And to heal you. To save you from your sins. To obliterate the separation between us and him. He can do it. Do you believe it? He can do it.
And then on the other side of that, I would just really invite people to do exactly what Andy was saying, is immediately Jesus heard someone was sick and he went. So let's be community to each other right now and do that. Let not one person stand alone. We want to come alongside and pray. And God's already doing something if they're standing, so all you have to do is agree. It's not about what we do. It's about what he's doing, right? So let's do that. Ask him for boldness for that.
Yeah, good. Okay, so if you want prayer, please stand up now. So, Becky, and let's just gather now. Now, as we see people that are standing, let's gather around. Let's get out of our seats, and let's go and pray for people, okay? Ask them if it's okay. Ask them what they want prayer for, and bless them. Bless what God's doing, okay? Anybody else? Either just stand up right in your seat or come up to the front and we'll pray for you. Jesus is here to heal, to be near us. Bless you guys. You need to get your kids if you have kids upstairs.
Did anybody bring in a coat for me?